Good afternoon. You're listening to Call My Lawyer with Jeff Falk of Falk & Klebanoff, a multi-practice law firm handling everything from personal injury and traffic violations to real estate law and commercial litigation. Jeff Falk is here. I'm John Caligari, joined with Ron Gold. So if you have a legal question for Jeff, give us a call now at 631-451-1039. Once again, since I'm a little under the weather and you didn't make that out, 631-451-1039. And if you don't feel comfortable asking your legal questions on the air, feel free to call Jeff at his office at 516-564-4200. Folks can call anytime, day or night, right, Jeff?
Yes, they can. How you doing, John?
Very
nice to
good
see you today.
Thanks. Yeah, a little under the weather, but hanging in there.
I'll see if I can help you out and talk more than you do today.
I would appreciate that.
Okay.
Maybe some of our listeners could give me a hand too and give a call. Once again, 631-451-1039. And if you have a question you want to email to Jeff, it's jfalk@optonline.net. That's JFALK. At optonline.net. So Jeff, tell me a typical day. What are most of your calls about?
Other than calls trying to get insurance companies to settle cases and talking to clients about various issues with their cases, typically we'll get calls about all different types of accident cases, car accidents, trip and fall accidents, construction accidents, trains, planes, bus accidents. We don't always get all of those calls on every single day. I'd love to get that many calls, but typically we get different people calling about different scenarios where they've gotten an accident, gotten hurt, they want to know if they have a claim. I'll address those calls. I'm not one of those lawyers that, you know, when the call comes in, I give it off to somebody else and they take the information and they call me later. No, most of the time I'll get the call. I'll talk to the client, find out what's going on, ask them some questions about the situation, their injuries, their health, and see if there is a claim that can be brought under the New York law that we are guided by.
You said trains and planes accidents. You get a lot of those?
Well, when I say trains and planes, we're talking about people that are sometimes on subway platforms that trip and fall, or if subway trains or collide into one another, which doesn't happen that often on Long Island, but it certainly happens more in the five boroughs. Planes, unfortunately, people have accidents on planes. Not necessarily we're talking about crashes, but, you know, overhead bins opening up, not secured properly, trip and fall accidents in the airports, in the terminals, things like that, those types of calls.
But I'd imagine the vast majority are car accidents.
Most of the people that call are calling about car accident cases. This happened, that happened. Do I have a case? It could be anywhere from, you know, we were in a car, we got hit in the back, to, oh my God, we were in a multi-car accident on the highway, we were in the hospital. So we get all different types of people calling about all different types of situations. And it's interesting because a lot of times people will call me up on the phone and the conversation will start with, oh, I had an accident. And I'll say, okay, did you get hurt? And they'll say, well, not really. And I'll say, well, I really can't help you. And they are very surprised as to why I can't help them. And I tell them, well, the fact that you have an accident doesn't mean automatically that you're entitled to bring a claim for injuries. You may be able to bring a claim for the property damage to your car, but you can't bring a claim for injuries. And they don't understand that very well. Well, I was almost killed. I said, well, the fact that you were almost killed, unfortunately for your case, is not a very good situation. Fortunately for you, it's good because you weren't almost killed. But for purposes of bringing a case in New York, it would have been better if you had died. Because, and that sounds kind of morbid and it's kind of weird, but New York doesn't pay money to people if they're almost killed. Mm-hmm. New York pays money to people if they have a serious injury, and that term serious injury is defined a specific way in the law. And what I do with the people when they call is I explain to them what that situation entails, whether they're on the phone or whether they're in a consultation in the office. I go through that with them and explain what a serious injury is, how lawsuits work in New York, how claims work in New York, so that they understand exactly why they may have a claim, why they may not have a claim. And of course, my opinion is my opinion as a lawyer. I've been doing this since 1984, my God. So I have some idea, I think, about what I'm talking about. So when somebody comes to me with a situation and I explain to them the situation, I think I have a pretty good feel as to whether or not they have or don't have a claim to bring against the person that caused their accident.
Give us an example of one of your claims without, you don't have to give names or anything, but, you know, how does the procedure go? from start to finish?
Well, Ron, typically if somebody calls on the telephone, the first thing we'll do or I'll do is ask them a whole bunch of different questions. What happened in the accident? Where were you coming from? Where were you going to? What type of an accident was it? If it was a car accident, were you rear-ended? Was it an intersection collision? Was there a traffic control device that was involved, such as a traffic light, a stop sign, a yield sign? Who had the stop sign? Who had the traffic light? What color was your light? What lane were you traveling in? Were you making a turn? Were you going straight? And the reasons why all of that information is important from the lawyer's perspective is so that the lawyer can get some understanding as to what actually happened in the accident. Were you driving? Were you not driving? Were you a passenger? Did you have your seatbelt on? Were the airbags deployed, not deployed? This gives us some idea and understanding of how bad the accident was. Was there physical damage? Are there pictures? Everybody has cell phones these days. People start snapping pictures right away at the scene of an accident, no matter what happened. Did you take pictures of your damage? Did you take pictures of the other car's damage? I can't tell you, just as an aside, how many times I get letters from certain insurance companies telling me that there was no damage to my car, meaning my client's car, so my client can't possibly have an injury that they're claiming they have. And then I say, well, that's all well and good that my client had no damage, but did you happen to see the front end damage on your client's car? Your insured's car was demolished, and so even though there was no damage to the back of my car, the bottom line is that there was enough damage to cause an accident. And we're talking about if there was a rear end hit or something like that. So damage, you know, the issue of damage, how much damage was done to the vehicle is very, very important. After we find out the facts about the accident, whether they were driving or whatever the case may be, then we start talking about what happened to them in the accident. Did they get hurt? Did they call the police? Did they get an ambulance to the scene? Those things are important because we want to know the severity of the injury. Many times, unfortunately, people are involved in these accidents and they're not able to talk to the police. They're not able to deal with the situation because they're so injured, they get hauled off to the hospital by an ambulance right away. So we may not have the opportunity to speak to these people until several days or several weeks after the accident, given the type of injury and the type of situation that they were in.
Now, what about, you just mentioned that, what happens if somebody, say, loses consciousness and they're not able to, speak to you, say they're even in a coma, do they still have some type of recourse when they are able to finally regain function, or say they're paralyzed or something to that account and they're not able to speak even? What happens to that?
Well, losing consciousness is unfortunately a situation that occurs in a lot of car accidents. People get hit in the rear, they hit their head on the steering wheel, they hit their head on the dashboard or a window, so they black out. The police come to the scene, they're not conscious, they take them to the hospital, and the next thing they know, from the time that they got hit, they wake up and they're in a hospital or they're home, or whatever the case may be. The fact that you lose consciousness doesn't in and of itself give you the opportunity to claim the right to get money damages. That, well, you can claim you can get money damages, but doesn't mean that you're going to get money damages for your injury unless you can prove that that state of unconsciousness has caused you to suffer an injury that has defined in the law a certain way. So that's why when we talk to the people about all the problems that they have, we want to know when we're taking in a new case, what all of the symptoms, what all of the complaints were. Were they conscious? Were they unconscious? Did they go to the hospital? What complaints did they make? What body parts were involved? What treatment did they get at the hospital? How intensive was the treatment? Were they admitted? Were they sent home? Were they given pills? Were they given injections? This all tells us the severity of the injury at the scene of the accident. There are a lot of people that get into car accidents that don't go to the hospital. There are a lot of people that get into car accidents that don't get knocked unconscious. There are a lot of people that get into car accidents that go home from the scene thinking that everything is fine. They get home, and then that night, all of a sudden, everything starts to bother them. That doesn't mean because they left the scene and they didn't go home, they didn't go to the hospital, they don't have a claim. No, it means that their injury, their symptoms manifested themselves after the accident, and now we have to deal with the fact, okay, were these all from the car accident? Did it take a while for the body to understand that it was an accident? We all go into a state of shock. Mm-hmm. Some doctors will tell you that your body gets shocked a little bit when an accident happened, and you may not start to feel pain in that part of your body until maybe a day or two later. We have situations like that where we talk to people on the phone and those things happen. So once we determine whether or not these symptoms exist, the severity of the injury, then we have to determine whether or not the law of serious injury is going to be applicable to the injuries that we're dealing with. Many times, it's easy to tell if it's, you know, the serious injury categories in New York. There's several of them. The obvious ones are if you're dead. Well, if you're dead, you're the one that's not going to be calling me. It's going to be a relative calling me. But that automatically qualifies under the law. If you break a bone, that automatically qualifies under the law. And many people will call a lawyer after they have a car accident, and the first question the lawyer will ask is, did you break anything? And the person will say, no, I didn't break anything. The lawyer will say, well, you don't have a case. That's not true. And I can't tell you how many calls I get from people that say, I called five lawyers, and all the lawyers told me I don't have a case because I didn't break a bone. Breaking a bone is only one category in the definition of serious injury to determine if you do have an injury that's compensable under New York law. So don't listen to the lawyers who are lazy enough to tell you, well, you didn't break a bone, so I can't help you. That's just a lawyer that wants an easy case. A broken bone is an easy case. It's worth whatever it's worth, but he doesn't have to, or she doesn't have to work that hard to get you to the finish line. So breaking a bone, if you didn't have a fracture, that's okay. So we dealt with death. We dealt with break fractures. We also have a category where, unfortunately, if a lady's involved in a car accident and she loses a baby in the accident, that is actually a category of serious injury. Right. How do you know? Well, you're going to go to the hospital. You can tell them you're pregnant. They're going to test. And if, God forbid, something happened to the baby inside of you, and if that's caused by the car accident, we can prove that that is a serious injury and that you're entitled to be compensated for it.
You're listening to Jeff Falk from Falk and Klebanoff. If you want to call him with any questions, it's 631-451-103.9.
So we have death, we have loss of a fetus, we have a broken bone, we have significant disfigurements, scars, the types of things that make you go, ew. You know, you're looking, you get really disgusted. That's not to mean that if you have a minor scar, you're not entitled to get money. But the level of scarring is certainly important, and that will be determined whether or not it fits into the category that's defined by the law.
And who determines that? A judge?
Well, the judge, most of the time when we're trying to settle the claims, the insurance adjusters that we're dealing with will look at the film, look at the pictures of the scar, do what they call a scar review. And they'll make a determination. Is it bad? Is it not that bad? Is it on a woman? Is it on a man? Scars on men are worth less money than scars on women, depending upon where they are on the body. So it's usually a subjective decision that's made by the insurance company. No matter what decision they make, we always disagree with them. You know, if they say it's bad, we say it's worse. If they say it's not bad, we say it's terrible. So we don't let them dictate whether it's bad or not. But there are some scars that are obviously, you look at them and you understand that they're pretty bad. We have permanent injuries, where you permanently lose the ability to use some part of your body, whether it's blindness, deafness, paralysis. All of those are categories that are easily identifiable when you're dealing with serious injury. Then you have the categories that are not so easy to deal with, and these are the ones that most of the everyday claims that we get through the office fall into, and these are the categories that deal with the permanent. These are the technical terms now, the permanent consequential loss of some part of your body, a significant limitation of use of some part of your body. And these terms are specifically defined as to how they apply and to which parts of your body they apply. It's not necessarily your heart or your arm, but it's systems and functions and things like that. And then, of course, there's the all-inclusive where we're dealing with a non-permanent injury that's determined to be existing from the accident by a doctor that exists for 90 out of the first 180 days. They don't necessarily need to be consecutive. Mm-hmm. And those injuries affect substantially all the things you do on a regular basis. So that before the accident, if you did X, Y, and Z, if after the accident you can't do X, Y, and Z, and you're not able to do that for 90 out of the first 180 days, and we can prove that through medical testimony and through the patient's, and through the client's own daily logbooks and activities and testimony, then we'll be able to prove that person's entitled to be compensated under the law. But when they first call us, those last categories are difficult to determine. So those are the ones that, you know, we'll talk to the clients a little bit, find out what the symptoms are, what their problems are, what their difficulties are, what their disabilities are, and find out where they're going to the doctor and just follow through with them and see if, you know, where that goes and how much their life has really been affected by the injuries that they're claiming from the car accident.
Once again, you're listening to Call My Lawyer with Jeff Falk. If you have a question for Jeff, give us a call at 631-451-1039. Now, one of the first categories you mentioned was fatality, and obviously the person who passed away would not be the one calling. How does this change the equation if you have a family member now calling up and trying to bring a claim?
Well, the first thing that's most important is once you as the person are no longer here on the earth, you have to have somebody to bring the claim for you, and that requires that person to petition the surrogate's court, which takes care of these types of matters, to become your representative, your estate's representative. So we'll help the person prepare those papers, submit them to the court so that we can get the process going as quickly as possible. It can be a relative, it can be anybody, as long as everybody agrees to it. And there are specific requirements that you have to follow that, you know, I don't want to go through right now. But the point of the matter is that it even if somebody unfortunately close to you passes away in an accident, there are ways that we can expedite the matter so that we can get you appointed right away and get the case rolling right away so that you're entitled to get the compensation for the family that you're entitled to under the law.
And once you go through surrogate court, it kind of just... and get that approval, it follows the same format as a typical case.
Yeah, once you're appointed as the representative of the estate, then the case takes on the same path that it goes no matter whether you're alive or dead. Obviously, you're not going to be going to the doctor. Mm-hmm. But as far as the paperwork to submit to the insurance company, analysis of the accidents, analysis of who's at liability, who's at fault, and then the value of the case and things like that.
Let me ask you a question as far as the insurance companies. They have attorneys. Do they try to send you to their attorneys to use their attorneys for these cases rather than letting us choose who we want to use?
No, the insurance companies don't send you as an injured victim to their lawyers. What the insurance companies will do is they will aggressively, and many of them do this, and I'm not going to name their names, but there are many insurance companies that once they find out that you have an accident, they will send a representative to your house with a checkbook. And that representative's sole purpose in life is to try to convince you not to bring a claim against them. And they will pay you what you think is a lot of money, but in reality is not a lot of money, to not bring a claim. So if you happen to be involved in an accident, and if you happen to have the situation arise where one of these representatives comes to your house and says, "Hi, my name is Joe. I'm from ABC Insurance Company. I heard you had a car accident. I'd like to give you $1,000 for your trouble. Don't bring a claim. Please don't sign any papers and don't take the check. Please make sure you call a lawyer. You want to call me? I'm more than happy to take your call. And I'll tell you right away, don't do it. Maybe you're not hurt. Maybe $1,000 is a lot of money. But that first day, that first week after the accident, I promise you that you have no idea how severe your situation is. And when the insurance companies come to you and offer you what you think is a lot of money, it's probably less than what you're entitled to at that point in time.
How often does that happen?
Almost every day.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah.
We wouldn't even know it. I think that's an excellent, excellent point. We'd be thinking, yeah, let's take the money that, you know, we probably don't have a case because we believe our insurance company.
No, you don't want to. The insurance company's sole purpose in life is to not pay out a lot of money. So their job is to reduce their exposure. How do they reduce their exposure? They send people out, field people, adjusters to the injured victims and say, well, if we're not, and they say to themselves, well, maybe this case is worth $10,000. Well, we'll pay this person $2,000 right up front. They won't have to go to a lawyer. They don't have to go to a doctor. We'll dissuade them from pursuing the whole thing. It's a minor case in our mind. So that's a lot of money to them. And we'll tell them, look, if you go to the lawyer, you got to pay the lawyer a third. So your $2,000 is really $5,000. So you're getting the same amount of money if you went to a lawyer. Don't listen to them. Just do not listen to them. Tell them, thank you very much for coming to my house. Tell him, thank you for your card. Thank you for setting up a claim. I'll have my lawyer give you a call. And that's the best advice that I can give anyone who's involved in a car accident, because it's just the wrong way to approach these things with regard to injury claims. Property damage is a whole separate thing. Those things are pretty easy to resolve. Somebody comes to your house and wants to offer you money for property damage, that's fine. Go right ahead and do it. But make sure that you know exactly how much money your car is worth, how much damage you had, photographs, the whole nine yards, so that when at the end of the day, you're getting the exact amount of money that you're entitled to get, assuming that they're paying you 100% for the damage. If they're only paying you 50% or 60%, you may want to argue that you're entitled to more money because the accident didn't happen the way they say it happened. So all of these things are very, very important for you to understand when these people come to your house with a checkbook that looks so nice and beautiful while you're sitting there and you just had this terrible thing happen to you, and they're telling you, look, don't go to a lawyer, we'll pay you money. And it happens every single day.
So that has nothing to do with the actual damage to the car. This is besides it. Because if they want you to get your car evaluated right away and see what's wrong with it.
That's fine. Go ahead and do it. Just if they give you something to sign and they're offering you money for your car damage, make sure you look at it and it says property damage release, or this money is only for your property damage. You don't want to be mistakenly signing something off that says, you know, I'm giving up all my claims for the small sum of money you're paying me for the damage to my car.
Now, do you want to go to a mechanic or something as well, besides, you know, before taking that money, just to get an appraisal of the damage as well to see if the money equals out there?
Sure, but you're going to have your car's probably going to, if it was bad enough, it's going to have been towed to some yard. And if it wasn't towed to a yard, yeah, you want to get your own appraisal just to see what it is versus what the insurance company says.
And once again, you're listening to Call My Lawyer with Jeff Falk of Falk & Klebanoff. If you have a call, if you have a question for Jeff, you want to give us a call, the number here is 631-451-1039. We're about to take a little break, but when we get back, we're going to talk some more traffic accidents, what to do if you have to go to traffic court. And if you have other questions or just don't feel comfortable calling on air, give him a call at 516-564-4200. We'll be right back. And welcome back. You're listening to Call My Lawyer with Jeff Falk from Falk & Klebanoff. If you have a question for him, give him a call right now at 631-451-1039. And Maria from Center Reach is calling. And Maria, go ahead. You're on the air with Jeff Falk. You have a question for him?
Yes. I was involved in an auto accident, and I was hurt pretty bad. And this was about a year ago. And, of course, there's a lot of out-of-pocket expense. I mean, not besides the medical bills, but for help getting back and forth to doctors and people to help you at home. And I was just wondering, on average, how long it takes normally for there to be, because I'm working with a lawyer now, how long does that process normally take? Because it's been a year, and I'm just kind of wondering what I should be worried about.
Hi, Maria. This is Jeff. Sorry to hear about your accident. I have a quick question for you. You said you're already working with a lawyer?
Yeah.
Have you called your lawyer first off and asked your lawyer why it's taking so long to get the money that you're asking me the question about?
Yeah, I haven't really gotten a straight answer, so I was wondering if I should take that as a sign or...
Well, I'm not going to speak for your lawyer, but I will tell you typically what we do with our clients is you have a car insurance policy. It's called a no-fault policy. Every car in New York has one. By reason of your no-fault policy, that policy entitles you to certain benefits. Those benefits include your medical expenses getting paid up to a certain amount. Those benefits include you getting transportation expenses, household help, nursing care, prescriptions, and lost wages if you're missing time from work. Depending upon when your claims are submitted, and they have to be submitted within a certain amount of time after the accident, the doctor will take care of submitting his own claims, so you don't have to worry about necessarily the doctor bills getting paid. But the out-of-pocket expenses that you're talking about, the travel expenses, things like that, we normally, when clients come to our office, we give them what we call a travelogue. That gives them the opportunity, every time they go from their home to a place of treatment and then back to their home, we have them document the mileage that it takes for them to go from point A to point B and then back to point A. After that log is filled out, we send that log in to the client's no-fault carrier, and we track that to make sure that the carrier sends the client the checks that the clients are entitled to get. And you're entitled to up to $25 a day for all of these incidental type of expenses that we've been talking about. So what I would suggest is that you call your lawyer up on Monday, which is tomorrow, and find out what they've been doing to try to get you these expenses. But if you haven't been giving them the information, then the problem might be from your end that you didn't give the lawyer the information he or she needs in order to submit it to your insurance carrier.
Right. Well, everything has been submitted, and I know they were having an issue with the insurance company, so I wasn't sure if, you know, if I should maybe contact the insurance company and ask them what their problem is and see what's going on.
Well, you're always entitled to call anybody that you want, but I always tell my clients, you hired me to do a job for you, so let me do what I do, because if you screw it up, I get to yell at you, but if I screw it up, you get to yell at me, and it's a lot easier if you yell at me.
Right, I understand.
So I would suggest that since you hired the lawyer to do the job for you, give the lawyer a call tomorrow. Give them the specifics and tell them that you're frustrated. And I'm sure that they'll be more than happy to try to help you out. And worst comes to work, tell them you want to come in and make an appointment to see them. Because a lot of times I tell clients to come to the office if they're not getting the satisfaction that they want on the telephone.
Okay. Oh, thank you so much for your help.
Good luck to you.
Thanks for your call, Maria. Now, is that a typical call that you'll get from people saying, you know, how long do these claims usually take to go through? It sounds like it's just a lengthy process.
Yes. A lot of times people that are involved in these accidents, they do get frustrated because they think that it's immediate gratification. And in some instances, it should be. But unfortunately, the insurance companies have to do their own investigation. For example, if you're losing time from work, they want to make sure that they get the wage verification form from your employer. Then they want to confirm that you're missing time from work. They want to confirm your wage amounts. And then after they do all of that, then they'll do maybe a possible audit, depending upon the type of job that it is. So the insurance companies, before they pay out money, even your own company under your no-fault policy, they want to make sure that all the T's are crossed and all the I's are dotted before they send you a check. With regard to household help and prescriptions, I mean, prescriptions are pretty self-explanatory. You fill a prescription, you pay for it, you give the lawyer the receipt, the lawyer submits it to the insurance company, and they should right away send a check right back for the prescription that you filled, up to $25 a day. Same thing with transportation expenses, so long as you can prove that you went from point A to the doctor or therapy or whatever, and then back to point A so that the insurance company can track the mileage, do the calculation, and send you a check. I mean, we get checks every day for clients that give us the information so that they can get their no-fault benefits that they're entitled to.
What do you think is the situation with her and her attorney? It's not to speculate on it, but is this typical that sometimes lawyers get so busy that they just don't get back to you like that? I know it's not typical of Jeff Falk.
Well, I can't say that it's not typical of any lawyer. I mean, thankfully, lawyers that are busy have a lot of people that they have to take care of. But certainly if a client's calling and a client's upset about something or concerned about something and it's money, you want to make sure that you try to take care of the client's concerns as quickly as possible. I wouldn't even begin to speculate as to why Maria's having issues, but I'm sure that if she expresses her concerns to her lawyer, if the lawyer cares, will want to make Maria as happy as he or she can possibly make her as quickly as they can so that they can find out what's going on and why Maria's not getting the money she's entitled to get.
And these things don't have any set time period. You know, it varies, right? I mean, she mentioned she was severely injured or seriously injured. So, I mean, that could really run the gamut of time, correct?
I mean, oh, yeah. I mean, there's no set time. I mean, the insurance company pays when it wants to pay. They have to pay within a reasonable amount of time. And they'll pay after they do their own investigation to determine if they should pay.
Gotcha.
And they don't want to go to court, right? They'd rather settle if they can.
I'll tell that to the thousands of cases that are pending in all the courts across the island and the city for no-fault benefits. I mean, there's a whole industry that sprang up because insurance companies decided that they didn't want to pay for certain medical expenses, didn't want to pay for certain treatment. So now there are lawyers for many years now that have been representing doctor facilities other places, you know, drugstores and things like that that haven't been paid for benefits, they're going to court and suing the insurance companies to get the money that the doctors in these other places are entitled to get. You're talking about claims that are $100, $200 claims in some instances, but the lawyers are representing people and doing it. We don't do that at Falk & Klebanoff. There are a lot of other lawyers that specialize in it, but there's a whole cottage industry that sprang up because the insurance companies decided we're not paying for certain things. And so, you know, it's not abnormal to see fights about these types of problems.
Now, just to switch gears for a second, Jeff, I have a friend who was driving down to Florida and unfortunately got into a car accident. Luckily, nobody was hurt. But if you're out of state and you wind up being in an accident where, you know, maybe there is some injury, does that change the equation at all? Obviously, you're in a different jurisdiction, so there are different laws. What happens in that situation?
Well, if you're a New York resident and you happen to get involved in a car accident outside of New York in another, obviously another state, if you're not in an accident with a New York resident in that other state, then you're stuck to deal with the situation under the law of the state where you had your accident. You still have the no-fault policy that you have on your car, and you'll deal with that issue by going to the doctor, doing what the things that you have to do through New York's no fault. But the actual liability issues and things like that, you'll have to deal with the local state where you had your accident.
Can you use your New York lawyer in that instance, or is it only somebody who is qualified to do law in that state?
To the extent that any of your claims are based on New York law, mm-hmm. You have any problems arising under your insurance policy in New York, you can certainly talk to your New York lawyer. But dealing with the injury part, dealing with trying to get money for the pain and suffering, that you should find a local lawyer in the state where you had the accident.
Gotcha. So now what about if you're involved in an accident where the other driver takes off? Do you have any recourse there? I mean, how do you file a claim against someone who you don't know who they are?
Yeah, hit-and-run accidents are very typical, and especially in certain areas on Long Island, because either people were drunk or they didn't have insurance on their car, whatever the case may be. Luckily, New York law requires every single insurance policy written in the state of New York to carry what's called uninsured motorist protection, and it is defined in your declaration page of insurance, which is the summary of your coverages, by the U symbol. That's uninsured motorist protection. What it does basically says is that if you get involved in an accident with a vehicle that leaves the scene, you have a right to bring a claim against your own insurance company for your, not only your medical expenses under your no-fault coverage, but also for your pain and suffering under your uninsured limits. So if you carry minimum limits on your uninsured limits of 25 and 50, not only would you be able to bring a claim for your no-fault benefits, your doctor bills, your lost wages, your incidental expenses, you would also be able to bring a claim against your own insurance company for your pain and suffering up to your policy limit of whether it's $25,000, $50,000, $100,000, whatever the case may be.
Once again, you're listening to Call My Lawyer with Jeff Falk from the law firm of Falk & Klebanoff. If you have a question for Jeff, give us a call at 631-451-1039. If you don't feel comfortable talking to him on air, feel free to give him a call at his office, 516-564-4200, or send him an email, jfalk@optonline.net. That's jfalk@optonline.net. Check out his website, falkandklebanoff.com. Now, we're talking about traffic accidents. Now, you also do a lot with traffic violations. And, you know, a lot of times if people get speeding tickets or tickets in general, they have to go to traffic court. And there's always a lawyer there who seems to represent the court itself. Does it ever make sense to bring your own lawyer as opposed to use their lawyer for say, a speeding ticket or any type of infraction?
Well, okay. On Long Island, you're dealing with a lot of local courts, especially in Nassau County and Suffolk County. You also have to deal with motor vehicle. Nassau County, which is located at 99 Main Street, and in some instances, 16 Cooper Street. Out here in Suffolk County, you're talking about the Motor Vehicle Bureau in Hauppauge that was created back in April. Where you're in the local municipalities, you're talking about the town prosecutor. That's the guy who you're going to go talk to about your ticket. Look, everybody out there gets traffic tickets. Everybody out there has the ability to go talk to somebody in the courthouse about whether or not they can reduce the violation that they got from a speed to a parking ticket or from a speed to a failure to signal, whatever the case may be. It's always best to get a lawyer, at least talk to the lawyer on the telephone and take a consultation as to whether or not it's a good idea for you to go with the lawyer or not go with the lawyer to the courthouse when it comes time for your traffic ticket to come up. Should you always use a lawyer? I mean, it depends on whether you want to spend the money on a lawyer. I mean, it costs money, and results are never guaranteed. Mm-hmm. So if you want to take the chance of not only spending the money on the lawyer, but also spending the money on a fine in the event that you have to pay a fine, I mean, that's certainly the choice of the motorist. So, I mean, people that call me, depending upon where the ticket is and what type of ticket it is, you know, I tell them on the telephone, look, I can help you, you can pay me, but I can promise you that no matter how good I am, there's going to be a situation that's going to come where you're not only going to pay me, but you're going to have to pay the fine on the ticket. As long as you're willing to take that chance, you know, I'm willing to do what I can to try to help you out. And that's typically more so when you're dealing with violations where you have to go to the city of New York, the traffic violations bureaus, which are located in Queens and the five boroughs, because there you can't negotiate tickets. You can't plea bargain tickets. It's either win or lose. And for those people that are out there that have unfortunately had to deal with that situation, they know what kind of kangaroo courts that we're dealing with. And I call them kangaroo courts because it's ridiculous. And you walk into the courthouse, and while the hearing officers themselves believe that they're giving you a fair shot, and many of them try to give you a fair shot, it's just absurd what goes on there. I mean, the police officers are taught to testify a certain way. They testify a certain way about traffic tickets. Whether you bring a lawyer with you or not, the lawyer is going to do his or her best job to try to cross-examine a police officer. But in the end of the day, in the traffic violation courts in the city, most of the charges are sustained in most instances because it's just stacked against the motorist.
Now, what about instances of, you know, these red light cameras that we see out there? Is there ever any reason to consult a lawyer and, you know, try to get off that way? Or?
You can always consult a lawyer if you believe that you were wronged by something. But the reality is that it's a no point violation. Of course, I think it's $50 to pay the violation. Why you would pay a lawyer $300 or $400 or $1,000 or $1,500 to go fight, unless you're the type of person that likes to fight and has money to burn, it makes no sense to me. I would just pay the fine since you're not going to get a point on your license and just be done with it. Gotcha. That's my advice, by the way. I mean, it doesn't mean that I'm right. And there are a lot of people that fight. I see things all day long about people that want to fight the system and they don't believe that it's fair that they should be targeted by a camera. They want their day in court. You know, that's all great. But from an economic point of view, from a reasonable point of view, I think it's just better off to just pay the $50 and call it a day.
And once again, we're speaking with Jeff Falk with the radio station Call My Lawyer. Jeff is with Falk and Klebanoff. You can give us a call right now, 631-451-1039, if you've got a question for Jeff. So, you know, you do a lot of, you know, traffic accidents and traffic court. And you also do a little bit of real estate. you know, what can you tell me about your dealings with real estate and what type of things do you cover there?
Well, we help people buy and sell their homes, buy and sell their businesses. We help people deal with situations where they owe rent to their landlord and they can't pay the rent, or the landlord wants to evict somebody because they haven't paid the rent or they're staying beyond the time that they're permitted to stay. We deal with those things on a fairly regular basis. Our practice is equipped so that we can do a real estate closing as quickly as possible given bank requirements and the environment out there, so that, you know, if you go to contract today, hopefully all things being equal, you'll have a deal consummated by May, middle of May or something like that.
That's great. Now, getting into the whole tenant-landlord issue, I mean, is this something you get a lot of calls about? Because it seems like on Long Island, at least, there's a lot of these, you know, illegal apartments where people find individuals they're hoping are going to help out with their mortgages or their property taxes, and unfortunately, the people don't pay. Is this something you have to deal with on a regular basis?
Yeah, we deal with it. You know, we tell the people that have the problems paying. We tell them what their options are, what could happen, what will happen. If it's the landlord, we tell the landlord, unfortunately, how long they're going to have to wait to get the person out, given how many people are involved in these situations, how backed up the courts are. And on both sides, depending upon whether it's the landlord and the tenant, then neither one is happy with the response that we give them. But, you know, you go as fast as you can. The courts are packed up. There are a lot of people that have problems, you know, with going through some tough economic times. People can't pay their rent. I understand that. People can't pay mortgages. Landlords want their money so that they can pay their mortgages. But the courts are so backed up and the procedures are such that it just takes forever to get a tenant out. You know, landlords in New York cannot resort to self-help in residential situation. So while it's nice that you can like to go in there and just change a lock and kick a tenant out, the reality is that you got to wait for the tenant to get served properly if it's a non-payment situation, or serve them properly if it's a holdover situation. Wait the requisite amount of time, then start a legal proceeding in the court. Go to court. Tenants usually adjourn them one or two times. The courts will give those opportunities. And then you got to wait for a trial date. After you get the trial date, now you got to try your case, and then you got to get your judgment, wait for the court to sign the judgment, and then deliver it to the sheriff. You're talking about a lot of time involved. So when we do these landlord-tenant things, depending upon, even if it's on the landlord side, our best advice to the client is, if your desire is to get out or to get the person out, let's try to work it out. Let's try to resolve it, because no matter what time frame we work with, it's usually going to be quicker than if we go through the whole nine yards of trying to fight it out in court.
Now, that whole time, obviously, the landlord isn't bringing in any rent of their own. There's no recourse once you're actually able to get the individual out to get that rent that they missed out on, is there?
Well, you can always sue the person for rent in the landlord-tenant proceeding, but if for some reason you're not able to sue them for rent in the landlord-tenant proceeding, and there are reasons why you can't, then if you know where the tenant went to, you can always bring a separate lawsuit against the tenant for the rent that they owe you, sure.
Great. And now you said it's a very timely procedure, and even just to file a case in the beginning, you have to wait a certain amount of time. Is that just to wait a certain amount of time to see if they actually pay, or and what is that time frame?
Well, if it's a non-payment, you serve them with what's called a three-day notice. If it's not a non-payment proceeding, which is every other type of proceeding, then you're dealing with a 30-day notice. In most instances, there are certain exceptions, but you're talking about a 30-day notice. So, for example, today is March 9th, I think. So if you serve somebody with a 30-day notice today, you not only have to wait all of March, but you have to wait all of April. So you can't bring a proceeding until May. So it takes a long time. But that's to give the tenants the opportunity to find the places that they need to find to move out. But keep in mind that once the tenant gets noticed, the court's going to be on the tenant's butt to say, look, you got noticed 45 days ago to get the hell out of the apartment. What are you still doing living there and not paying the landlord rent? You can't live for free. So it works to a certain extent in the landlord's favor when you get to court, but the time frames are built in because of the system.
Now, you said obviously non-payment is a reason to bring these proceedings. What are some other examples? I'm sure property damage would be one. What else is there?
Well, if there's a lease, there's various clauses in the lease that gives the landlord the right to bring whatever proceeding he wants to bring or she wants to bring whenever they can. If it's not a lease situation, then you have statutes that deal with the tenant's behavior and if the tenant is doing something that they should or shouldn't be doing in the apartment that gives the landlord the opportunity to go in and evict the tenant.
So the safest way to do it is to draw up a contract, obviously, and put all these stipulations in there beforehand.
Always best to have a lease with your tenant.
And is that something that a lawyer should or could look over ahead of time?
Yeah, you should want to have your lawyer look it over. But if you're a sophisticated landlord, you know what you're doing. You have a lot of properties. I'm sure you're very familiar with the process. There's plenty of forms online that you can get that most lawyers use as well that cover everything that you need to cover.
Well, it sounds like you should have a lot of security deposits in this, right?
As much as you can get.
Yeah. So once again, this has been Call My Lawyer with Jeff Falk of Falk and Klebanoff. And Jeff, we just want to thank you for taking the time today to speak with us and answering all these questions. You know, it really is such important material for people to know and understand. If you want to get to know Jeff a little bit more, check out his website, falkandklebanoff.com. You can email him, jfalk@optonline.net. That's JFALK at optonline.net. You can give him a call, 516-564-4200. If you leave a message, he promises he'll get back to you as soon as possible. And if you want to talk to him on the air, come back next week, this time, 2 to 3 o'clock on 103.9. Give him a call. Thanks again.
Bye-bye, guys.